Hey everybody, it's your old pals Ian,
Chewy,
Alan,
and Ryan.
And we're here to talk about all the great shows on the Stuff and Things Podcast Network, aren't we, boys?
How many shows? Oh, wait, sorry. Yes, we are. How many shows?
There's four good of job, them, Alan. You're doing four good. Of them, and they come out on all different various days of the week. Of course, every Friday you can listen to the original, the classic Stuff and Things, where Chewy and I just kind of talk to each other like we're best buddies. We just kind of talk like
your best buddies.
Like you just and your best like friends best talk. Like we're best buddies. Like we're best buddies. Yeah. Watch it. You're on thin ice. I have Alan over here.
That's right.
Be friends with Alan.
Yeah, that'll go well.
You can check that out every single Friday if you like hearing conversations that you and your friends would have, but with two total strangers. What else do we have on the Stuff and Things Podcast Network, boys?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Ian.
Alan selling
I took a stance here. We have four color commentary.
What's that show about?
I'm about to get to that.
Gee, Alan, what's that show about?
Thank you. I'm so glad you asked. It's a comic book podcast where four comic book nerds talk about books that they bring, sort of like a comic book book club. But we also talk about other things like movies and comic book happenings on top of all that. So it comes out every other Wednesday, which is free, not free comic book day, but it is sometimes. It's just every comic book day.
If your parents are still buying your comic books like they are for me, then it is free comic book day.
It's every other Wednesday that comes out.
Gosh, that sounds great.
Ryan's really excited. Ryan, tell us about the redheaded stepchild of the Stuff and Things Podcast Network.
The sad, lonely other child of the Stuff and Things Podcast Network is a podcast we like to call Super Action Bros. Podcast where we talk about movies with explosions and car chases and lots of people dying a lot and stuff. It's every Saturday, the most action-packed day of the week with Ryan and Ian.
Yeah, where we take a critical look at those movies that are commonly watched while eating a lot of popcorn and snacks.
Pizza and beer and stuff.
I like those things.
Isn't there one more podcast that we're forgetting about?
Nope, let's move forward.
In the dark recesses of the Stuff and Things Podcast Network, where only the brave dare to dwell.
Not me. I'm out of here.
Yes. I'm here to tell you about you already talked about the redheaded stepchild. I'm here to tell you about the neglected jet black haired
evil
demon ghost. Son of the sun ghost of the network.
The sun ghost?
Yes.
The ghost of the sun?
Exactly.
Oh, I was thinking like a sun ghost, like
son of ghost.
Yeah. It is referred to as Eyes in the Dark, where we talk about horror movies with movie expert Dr. Jurassic Price and the classic and ever velvety voiced Evan is on it too. And of course, because we have busy schedules, it is released every other Monday, the most terrifying day of the week.
Whoa! Monday is legit the most terrifying day of the week.
See, guys, there's something for everyone here on the Stuff and Things Podcast Network. Everybody can enjoy a little something here. And we want you to enjoy now. So sit back, relax, get yourself a nice beer or juice box.
Yeah, if you're driving, don't drink beer.
Don't do that.
The juice box is fine.
But what you can do is
root
enjoy.
Root beer, also okay.
What you can do is enjoy another fine Stuff and Things podcast.
Welcome to Super Action Bros, a podcast to talk about movies with explosions and car chases.
And that band with Crash and those boys, you know.
Is that girl a boy? I'm Ryan.
And I'm Ian. It's not a race, you guys. Welcome to Super Action Bros. Welcome to the final week of Big Two Boot Celebration Star Wars 7. No Star Wars. This is where we've been watching movies that are based off of comic books that aren't from Marvel or DC. We're finishing it up with get ready for a gush fest, guys.
Yeah, this is. Let's just lay it all out there. This is one of our favorite movies.
You thought The Incredibles and Hot Fuzz and Speed Racer were bad. Get ready, because this time we watched a little movie, a little cult classic, I will say.
I'm willing to call it that.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Woo!
But before we get into Scott Pilgrim, and we're really excited. Before we get into Scott Pilgrim, though, there are a couple ways you can reach out to our show if you like the things that we do and want to be involved. Way number one you can do that is by going to our. That's not even
It's another movie that's kind of a musical.
Would you argue this is, well, we'll get there anyway. There are a couple ways you can reach out to us. Way number one is through our website, superactionbros.com. So you can go there. It's a Tumblr site, and you can follow us on Tumblr and get updates when new episodes come out on the Tumblr feed. There's also a nice little sidebar on that site where you can do a lot of nifty stuff. Thing number one you can do is subscribe to us on iTunes.
Yay.
So you can do that. You can also, if you have other podcasting apps, anything that accesses that iTunes directory, so I know like Instacast, for example, accesses that. And actually, Ryan, I don't know if you know this, but Instacast has an Apple Watch app, and you can control and listen to your podcasts on the Apple Watch.
Well, I can't.
Well, I can.
Okay.
But I don't.
That makes one. But
you
of could. Us.
You can also, so you can subscribe to us on iTunes if you'd like and leave us some reviews and things like that. Follow us on stuff like Instacast and whatever you'd like. You can also reach out to us via social networking. We are on many social networks. Place number one you can find us is, of course, Twitter, the most popular social. I would argue it's the most popular social net. Maybe Facebook.
No, Facebook. Parents. Yeah.
But like.
Facebook's got the mom thing on lock.
For the young people, you know, Twitter's been going strong though. I mean, a lot of people discounted it first, but it's become very important for reaching out to people. So it's a great way to reach out to us. You can reach out to us through the show on Twitter at Super Action Bros. You can also reach us individually on Twitter if you'd like. My Twitter handle for Ian is at iRitch. That's at iRitch.
I'm on Twitter at Ryan Roop. That's RyanRuppe.
You can also reach out to us via Facebook if you'd like. Give us a big thumbs up on Facebook. We also are on another social media platform known as Letterboxd. It's letterboxd.com. It's a movie social media review site. So you can actually go on there and post your own reviews of movies, and we post them some up there of the movies we watch. You can also check us out, or another way you can reach out to us would be the old-fashioned way. Good old email.
Email.
You can email us at superactionbros@gmail.com.
Classy.
And you can also check out some of the other shows that we have on the Stuff and Things Podcast Network at stuffandthingsnetwork.com.
If you like movie chat and you like scary movies with people who like to say foul words, then you should check out Eyes in the Dark.
Yes, it's our sister podcast, we will say.
They're the girls.
Our older sister who smokes in the girls' bathroom.
No, we're older.
Wait, it's true. Okay, our younger sister.
No, we're like the bookish older one, and they're like the rebellious younger sister.
Rebellious one. Okay.
Who smokes in the
bathroom?
So
if you watch like Bob's Burgers, we're like Tina, and they're like Louise.
We're the ones who spend lunch in the library. We spend lunch in the library.
Yeah, that's Tina. Tina writes erotic friend fiction.
There you go.
Her friends touching butts. So,
all right.
Anyway, welcome to Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Ryan, let's talk about the background of Scott Pilgrim before we get into the movie itself. So,
yeah, right.
What is the comic book this is based on?
Sure, it's based on a 6-issue series
or 6 books.
Six book series called Scott Pilgrim, and then they each of them have various titles.
It's from a little publisher called Oni Press.
Yeah, who do a lot, but they're now, you know, they're not Image or anything.
No, they're good independent, but they're not, like, they don't put anything with superhero, nothing with a cape like that.
Typically no. But the books are there. If you're familiar with the Japanese comic book style of manga, they're very thick black and white comics that move very quickly. It has kind of a distinct style. Yeah. Sort of American manga.
Yeah. And they're very centric in like video game and nerd culture.
It's true. And the
mindset of a 20-something.
Like, yeah.
I would say 20-something male specifically. But oh, yeah. I think I've recommended this. This is like a good first comic book for when, like, if you're into comics and you meet a lady person who has no interest in comics and you say like, I think I might have a book that you might like. Scott Pilgrim's are usually a good safe bet.
It's true.
Because it's good, it's funny, and it's got some good female characters in it, and you know,
it's funny.
And even if you have somebody who's like, because I know a lot of girls who are like, yeah, strong female characters doesn't really matter to me, but to me, I'm like, I love strong female
characters. Not like in the fighting sense. I mean, yeah. That happens, but yeah. like,
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what? It's funny. I'd never like thought of a way to like pitch this story to someone before. Uh-huh. But it's basically like, what if all of the Street Fighter that you play made you really good at actually fighting people in the street? And that's basically sort of on a really basic level. Yeah. The idea behind Scott Pilgrim. Sure.
I would also argue, I mean, if you want to elevator pitch it to me, in order to date girl has to defeat 7 evil exes and he learns about himself and not being a wiener anymore.
And he learns about...
It's almost like you have to face all the bad... Like when you date... Because Ryan got lucky. Ryan dated a girl, then that girl became his wife.
It's true.
So you got lucky. He hasn't had to deal with... Well, I don't know. I don't know if she did. Did she date people before you?
Neither of us really dated stuff. But to be fair, evil exes are not the only obstacles you must surmount in someone's past.
That's
before
true.
You mingle your lives together forever.
That is true. But the idea of that baggage that somebody carries is a physical thing that you have to overcome.
You have to literally fight.
Yes. That's, so... It's an interesting idea, and I'm curious. I don't know. You probably know more about the creator, the writer, and artist of the book, Brian Lee O'Malley. Do you know where any of the ideas of this book came from?
A lot of it came from his life in Toronto when he lived there and his dumb friends.
Okay, well there you go.
I mean, not to say that they're dumb, but I mean everybody has dumb friends. Yeah, when they're like in their early 20s.
Yes,
when you're 22, all of your friends count as your dumb friends.
You were my friend when I was 22, I think.
See? I
you were a dumb friend.
Ugh, one of Ian's dumb friends.
That was me.
That's how you say it.
So, but this movie came out when? 2010?
2010, yeah. 5 years ago
now. I remember seeing this movie 3 times in the movie theater.
I saw a free preview screening of this movie and then proceeded to pay for it 2 more times.
Yeah, I was begging people, please see this movie. It's so good.
And even without the Scott Pilgrim, like the part that we were big fans of the comic, I was really excited about this movie because... Edgar Wright is the director of this movie.
Who you may know, we talked about Hot Fuzz. He's also known for Shaun of the Dead.
And The World's End.
And
that's all of the movies that he's directed.
Yep. And so, Spaced, which is a show.
Yeah.
But it's also good.
But I mean, if you've seen his other movies, he has a very distinctive, very action-packed, and very funny style.
Yeah. He does visual comedy on a smart level.
And so
there's a lot of that in this movie.
Like, if you don't care at all for any of the Scott Pilgrim stuff, but you like... good action and funny action, this is a movie. Or if you grew up in the 80s and 90s and played Nintendo.
Yeah, I was gonna say, now let's say you don't care about Edgar Wright or comic books, but you're like, I like video games. This movie does video game stuff more effectively than any movie based on a video game has ever done, in my argument. And I've seen a lot of movies based on video games.
I've never seen a movie based on a video game that has a P bar that goes down when somebody goes to
that. That's true. I've not seen that. The only one I might argue that does it as good or maybe a teensy bit better because it's video game oriented is Wreck-It Ralph.
Okay, yeah.
But that's, you know.
It's a movie for kids. This is a movie that's rated PG-13.
Yes, it's not for
deals with grown-ups, you know, relationships.
If you're a late teen, early 20-something, this is the movie for you.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. We talked to Edgar Wright's the director. Who screen wrote this movie?
So the screenwriting in this movie was done by 3 people. One of them was Edgar Wright, the director. The other one is Brian Lee O'Malley, the creator of the comics, who actually worked with Edgar Wright and the other writer before he had finished his series.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of this movie deviates a bit from the comics because the comics didn't exist yet.
Yeah,
when this movie was being made,
it's pretty. There are some. There's one part that's really deviates, but the last bit of it gets the meat of what the comic ends. So it gets the basic idea.
So the other writer on this movie, interestingly enough, is this guy named Michael Bacall, who's been in a bunch of movies. But you know what other movies he's written?
What's that?
Well, he wrote the story for Project X. If you've heard about that movie, it's a movie about these kids throw a party and then like hundreds of thousands of people show up and they destroy a whole city block or something.
No, I've not seen it.
Yeah. And then he also wrote the story for 21 and 22 Jump Street.
Oh, really?
The newer, the Chris Lord.
I actually heard that the first one was not, I didn't hear about the second one. I heard the first one was actually
I heard that they were very funny.
Yeah, I heard
they were
very funny.
He's also been in like tons of movies. Michael Bacall is in Gangster Squad, Django Unchained.
Django Unchained?
Django. I haven't seen it.
Django.
That
D
movie.
Is silent.
Inglorious Bastards, Death Proof. Obviously, he's Quentin Tarantino.
You forget about Gangster Squad.
He's been on an episode of CSI.
I wanted to see that movie. You should watch that on here. Remember that one, Gangster Squad. Write that down.
All right, I'll write that down.
It's like a bad gangster movie, but it's like in the vein of a Michael
Mann. It's a Michael Mann shot on digital gangster movie.
I heard it's
movie,
really bad, yeah. But I don't care. I want to see it anyway.
So Scott, so that's the writers and director. The other person worth mentioning in the crew is a guy named Bill Pope.
Okay.
He's the cinematographer.
Mm-hmm.
He's been the cinematographer for some other movies. For instance, Spider-Man.
Oh, the original ones?
The Matrix.
Oh, okay.
He's like, if you want an action movie to look fantastic, you get Bill Pope.
Mm-hmm.
The guy is like, if you look at his IMDb page and look at, he's directed some stuff, not very much. He's directed some Metallica music videos and he's directed a couple episodes of Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey.
Oh.
But, if you look at the movies he's been a cinematographer on, obviously he was a cinematographer on The World's End.
Mm-hmm.
He was director of photography in Men in Black 3.
Okay.
It's not a perfect resume. The Spirit, Spider-Man 3, Team America, World Police.
I don't want to put that on the negative side of the resume for me.
All of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, all of the Matrix movies, Bedazzled.
The Brendan Fraser one?
Yep.
Mm. The original one's great. That one's not so good.
Clueless?
No, I like Clueless.
Blank Check?
I mean, Emma? The
Army of Darkness?
Oh, Blank Check. Oh, Army of Darkness. That's good.
Dark Man. Obviously, he's a
Sam Raimi.
Yeah, so
did you do Evil Dead 2 as well?
I'm working on it. He did not do Evil Dead 2. Okay. His first one was Army of Darkness, but that's probably
because it's the connection. Movie.
There's a lot of Sam Raimi stuff that Edgar Wright is a user of, and so it makes
sense.
That's
true. Cool.
But that's part of why, at least, I think this movie looks so super good.
I mean, yeah, it does. It does look really good. It's funny because now, because we were talking about how they made the black and white, the original books were black and white, manga style. They've since recolored them all and released them in a 8.5 by whatever.
In a larger size.
Yeah, it's a larger format, pretty much like a typical comic book size.
As opposed to the digest size, which is smaller.
Mm-hmm,
which a reader's digest.
Usually, to be honest with you, the color ones look great, but if someone's first reading it, I'm like, you gotta read the black and white
ones.
You
don't have to.
But you should. Because as we talked about earlier, we discussed there's jokes in there that you can miss because there's a couple jokes because it's black and white that they make.
Obviously, the movie doesn't have those
jokes. No. The movie is very colorful. And I think that's probably where they got the idea to recolor them all. It's like, the movie looked pretty good. We should probably just go back and get some more money off that Scott Pilgrim.
So let's talk about the cast.
Oh, man. This cast is gargantuan. All right,
so I think we got to get something out of the way first.
Yes.
And that is a young man named Michael Cera.
Okay. Michael Cera is...
George Michael Bluth.
Yes. He is.
So Michael Cera is the movie. I feel like a lot of people don't like Michael Cera anymore. I don't know if it's because of this movie, but I think it was around this time. He just there's so many movies with Michael Cera. It's basically what I'm worried is going to happen with Chris Pratt. Because I love Chris Pratt and everything, and I don't want everybody to get sick of his deal.
Yeah, but I think he's different than Michael Cera.
I think that
I'm sorry, Michael. Chris Pratt is very traditionally handsome when you make him. Michael Cera is a weird looking dude.
He is.
But that's okay. Like, that's what makes it fit. Like, I remember people being like, Michael Cera, Scott Pilgrim. Nah, I can't really imagine anybody else because he's just kind of.
He's perfect because he's sort of awkward, but he's kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
that's exactly what this role requires.
Scott is a dynamic character in the movie. He changes throughout the course of the movie. It's not like a Ferris Bueller situation.
One of Ryan's signs of a good movie.
Is when the main character changes?
Yeah.
Or when a character changes?
Main.
Really?
Because
Ferris Bueller's a good movie and Ferris Bueller doesn't change.
Could be better.
Really? You'd argue if Ferris Bueller changed?
No, I'm saying...
But Cameron changed. Cameron was the dynamic.
You could argue that Cameron is the main character.
You could. There's also that whole theory that
Ferris is
like, it's like Fight Club.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, Michael Cera. I like Michael Cera in this. I think he does a good job.
No, he's good. He plays that sort of like dumb guy who's really full of himself, but. There's a lot of layers to his character in this movie.
Yes.
And I feel like if somebody just played it on the surface as like, sort of a jerk or sort of an idiot, then a lot could be missed.
You know, it's funny. It took me a while because, guys like you and I think, and being the nerdy kind of awkward dudes, are meant to identify with Scott Pilgrim. Like, we're meant to identify with that person. And, when I first read the books and saw this movie, I'm like, oh, man, Scott's so cool. And then he gets Ramona Flowers. He's really cute, punk rock girlfriend. And then I watched this again, I watched this movie, I think, when I was about actually Scott Pilgrim's age, when I was 22. is when I saw this.
That's before
movie.
Your brain is fully formed.
22 or 23 is when I was. And I was
your
like,
brain took a long time.
Well, it just, I was so into it and being like, Scott's the best that I haven't watched it in a few years. And I watched it again. I sat down and watched it for the podcast here. I'm 27 now. Oh, and so looking at it, I'm just like, oh, he's a jerk. Because I learned a lot about relationships since then. Since then, mm-hmm. I had a big major breakup and I learned a lot of stuff about relationships and people. And I'm like, oh, he's kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
Like he's using somebody else to get over somebody else. That's terrible. He shouldn't be doing that. It's not very nice.
It's true.
But I learned that he's not Mr. Cool Guy like I thought he was. I'm like, he's kind of a jerk. I kind of don't like Scott in the beginning.
And I wonder if it was, and I mean, and sort of that's funny because one of the big criticisms against his other show, Arrested Development, was that nobody liked any of the characters. And it depends. I think depending on who you are when you watch this movie, he is various levels of likable.
Yeah. It depends. And he becomes likable. Don't get me wrong. By the end, I'm like, okay, he redeems himself.
Scott's earned the power of self-respect.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to talk about there. But I liked Michael Cera in this casting. I guess we'll leave it at that for now. We'll get more into the plot once we get into it.
All right, so let's talk about who's who of young actors in 2010.
Okay.
Well, also known as the cast of Scott Pilgrim.
So we also have playing Ramona Flowers, Mary Elizabeth Winstead?
I think it's Winstead.
Winstead? I always say Winstead, but I don't
know. One time she played Bruce Willis's daughter.
Yeah, in a
Die Hard 7?
No.
15?
4.
I was close.
She plays I'm going to say romantic interest, but she's a pretty deep character as well, and I don't think calling her the romantic interest is not accurate enough. Ramona Flowers.
Yeah.
Girl with the coolest name ever.
And she has rollerblades.
Yes. Let's see. And then we have, who else we have on here? Oh my God. One of my favorite characters in this movie. Kieran Culkin as Wallace Wells.
That's Culkin. Macaulay's younger brother.
Yes. Kieran, you may know from Saved. He was in Saved.
Uh-huh.
And he's so good in there too. Kieran Culkin is magic in this movie. He is great.
He plays Scott's sassy gay roommate.
Yes, named Wallace Wells. And I like the way, by the way, because there's going to be a lot of characters. There's a lot of characters in this movie. I like the way they're introduced. I like the little, can they stole it right from the comic? These little black boxes appear with their name, their age, and maybe some sort of weird personality thing about them. The way that they do it is genius. Like, this movie is so well done in that way, where it doesn't be like, I'm Scott's gay roommate, Wallace Wells. Like, you don't have to do that, because it's just, boom, it's right there.
Yeah.
It's just, you've been thrown into. It's very, we talk about a four color commentary, very kind of manga like just throws you into this world
and it should be.
And he's great. He has some of the best lines in the movie.
He does have some of the best lines in the movie. He delivers them perfectly.
Exactly,
pretty much everything he says is humorous.
Exactly. Let's see, who else do we have? Allison Pill is who you really like. I'll let you gush on Kim Pine for a minute.
Well, I like the character of Kim Pine in the Scott Pilgrim thing, because she's sort of like Scott Pilgrim who has grown more emotionally stable.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, at least in the comic books, she's sort of the hero of the book.
Sort of.
She like, if you're going to talk about characters who have like everything they say is gold, everything that Kim says is fantastic. Cause she basically like deals with Scott Pilgrim all the time, but she's his ex-girlfriend and she kind of like is done dealing with his crap.
Uh-huh.
And so pretty much everything she says is just fantastic. She's got so many good lines in the
She's
movie.
Been in some other things too. She's been in like Dan in Real Life. She was in Milk.
Oh, okay.
She was in, of course, Scott Pilgrim. She was in Midnight in Paris.
There you go.
Which is the Woody Allen movie. And most recently she was in Snowpiercer. Small role, but she was
With somebody else who's in this movie.
Yep, that's true. Somebody else is in this movie. We'll get to him later. We'll go through the X's in order to the best of our ability.
Let's do that.
Let's see. Who else is in our cast? We have Scott Pilgrim's older sister. Older, right?
No, she's technically his younger sister.
But she calls him baby brother.
Yeah, because he's emotionally stunted.
Who is played by the now super pitch perfect famous Anna Kendrick.
Yeah.
As Stacy Pilgrim.
She doesn't sing. This is a musical movie and she doesn't sing at all.
Not a note.
And she's great. She plays like she plays one of those people. You've all seen them. It's like a girl who's just out of high school who like has everything together and is super on top of just like her life and moving forward. She plays one of those characters, just a go-getter, you know, and it's great because it's funny because that you said that, like, oh, she's his older sister, right? Because you kind of get that feeling, even though he's 22 and she's 18, whereas mm-hmm. she has a job and she knows what's going on in her life, and he's just like, you know, a loser.
Who else is in here? Oh, of course, we have April herself. We have
oh yeah
oh, God, can't think of her name right now. I had it right in front of me. Now it's gone. Oh, there she is. Aubrey Plaza.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Aubrey Plaza. Speaking of Chris Pratt.
Yeah, and Parks and Recreation. This is pre-Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
Aubrey Plaza.
And I would not doubt that somebody at Universal was like, oh, this might have been right around maybe Parks and Rec time.
Yeah.
It was like when... either somebody from a Universal who also does NBC came by the set and said, I like her for this show. Or they saw that show. They go, oh, yeah, you're on that show. We need a girl like you in this movie.
The story I've heard about her getting cast in Parks and Rec is that someone in casting like met her and then was talking to somebody else who was casting Parks and Rec. And was like, you have to meet this girl. I just met the weirdest girl I've ever met in my life. We need to find a place for her on this show because she's so strange.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
she's great because she's just angry the whole time, and Aubrey Plaza being angry is one of the great things in life.
Agreed.
Is just her like being angry or not liking something. It is something that she excels at. And also, she curses tons in this movie. This is a PG-13 movie, so every time she curses, it's purposely sort of blacked out,
mm-hmm.
and to the point that's at one point Scott says, "How are you doing that with your mouth?" they really, yeah. Oh, fun.
Who else is in this movie? Let's see. So we of course have our seven evil exes. But
wait, you haven't.
Who did I forget?
Ellen Wong.
Oh, and of course Ellen Wong. I'm sorry. Much like Scott forgets about Knives Chow, so do I. Knives Chow, which is another character that goes through a lot of changes in this movie.
She does.
I like Knives Chow, but I hate Knives Chow. I like Knives Chow who's fighting and who's trying to get Scott back. I don't like, oh my God, Scott's the best thing in the world, Knives Chow, because yeah. I'm like yelling at the screen, he's not, he's terrible. Like, he's not nice to you. He's bad. You are not doing him any favors. You're a 17-year-old girl who just thinks he's the cat's pajamas, but he's garbage and he's not anything special. And that's what bums me out, because I'm just like, I used to relate to Scott Pilgrim a lot more, at least in the beginning. And now I'm like, I like Scott at the end better. I like middle period Scott the best.
She hasn't been in too many other things since Scott Pilgrim, actually, which is surprising. She was on that show, The Carrie Diaries,
okay,
which is like a Sex in the City spinoff.
Yeah, she was on, like a prequel.
Like the bulk of the series.
Oh, okay.
She was also in a movie called Silent Night, where a small village has to fight off a killer Santa.
Oh, sounds great.
Doesn't it? And then she was on an episode of Castle.
Okay.
That's that one with, what's his name? Firefly guy.
So who else is in this movie? Let's see.
Well, we were going to go through the evil exes.
Let's go through the evil exes. Well, the ones that, I'm sorry, there's a lot of different ones, but the ones that we all know and love.
Ones that matter.
Captain America is an evil ex in this?
Pre-Captain America, Captain America, but Fantastic he'd already been Four. Fantastic Four. Yeah, Chris Evans.
It's crazy to think that the same year this came out, so did Iron Man 2. And like just like a year or something later, like what, you know, a year later, a year, or like 2 years, no, a year later, he would be Captain America.
Well, and I think the really funny thing about him being in this movie is that the character that Chris Evans plays, mm-hmm. is a action movie star.
Yeah.
Like jerk, he literally plays an action movie star in this movie. And then like 2 years later, he was Captain America.
That's right.
And he remains Captain America.
Who else do we have here?
Oh, and he's so funny. So we have Superman.
We do. Yeah, we have Superman. We have Brandon Routh playing Todd Ingram.
And he's really funny too.
You know what? I'll tell you, man. Brandon Routh. I mean, at least from what I understand,
he got the short end of the stick as Superman.
He did. I mean, they kind of
that guy's a funny guy.
They kind of cast him because like, oh, you look kind of like Christopher Reeves. Let's cast you.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I'll tell you, man. On Arrow, he's on the Arrow show right now. He's Ray Palmer.
Okay,
who becomes the Atom. He's really good on that show. He does a really good job. Like, almost when you're watching, you're like, I'm kind of forgetting you're Superman. Like, I don't even need to think about that. It never happened.
You never think about it in this movie, especially he's got this dorky bleach blonde hair, which is like, it's purposely dorky.
Uh-huh.
And it's fantastic.
Also, another evil ex. Another person who kind of is a person who people know the name of. Brie Larson is in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
As Envy Adams.
What else has she been in?
She's been in, speaking of 21 Jump Street, she was in that.
Oh, okay.
She was in that movie where Joseph Gordon-Levitt likes adult videos.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was called...
She also was in a couple episodes.
Scarlett Johansson?
She was in Community. Yes, she was. Oh,
okay.
She's been in that show, which is... I'm getting ready for this title. NTSF SD SUV.
Oh, that's the Adult Swim parody of crime procedural shows.
She's been a lot of stuff. She was in United States of Terror when that was a show.
Oh, okay.
A lot of stuff. And also we forgot Mae Whitman.
Her?
Yeah. Which I wonder if Michael Cera's like, hey, I know a girl who might.
I don't know. Mae Whitman actually is fantastic. And in my household, she's much better known as Twilight Sparkle and Katara. No, she's not Twilight Sparkle.
No.
As Katara from Avatar.
Is she in something in My Little Pony?
Yeah, I think she might be a pony. But she's definitely done a ton of voice. Oh, no, you know what? She is Katara, and she's also Tinkerbell. She is the official voice of Tinkerbell.
Oh, that's right. She's been in a lot of stuff, it looks like.
Independence Day?
Yeah, that weirded me out. She was in Avatar, like you said. Perks of Being a Wallflower. Looks like she was also in A Million Ways to Die in the West. Let's see.
Yeah.
She's done a lot of voice work. A lot of Jake and the Neverland Pirates, Young Justice.
No, she is the official voice of Tinkerbell. Anytime you hear Tinkerbell talk in any Disney-based media, it's Mae Whitman.
Batman Brave and the Bold?
Yeah.
She was on that. She's been on a lot of stuff. Cleveland Show. She's a steady working actress, I'll give you that.
And she does a ton of voiceover work, and she's funny.
Let's see. We have Mae Whitman. Of course, how can we forget Gideon Graves himself.
Yeah, literally the biggest star in this movie.
Jason
the time.
Schwartzman.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, he's so good. I like him in those too.
Oh, Jason Schwartzman
is such a D-bag, and like you've known. Let's put it this way. If I'm going to cast myself as Scott in this reality, there's somebody I know who's very much a Gideon Graves type, and you know who it is. never mind. I'll tell you off mic. But
all right.
I would argue that person is a Gideon Graves type, like Mr. Cool guy, has to know all the cool stuff.
I think you should literally pause the podcast and tell me who you're talking
about.
You know
who I'm talking about.
I'm serious. I'm serious.
Oh, all right.
Okay. I'm not going to be able to continue this podcast.
We'll be back in a minute.
About. So yeah, his family related. Gets a.
You know what I just realized? Well, something about this. I didn't put it together until just now. And you're probably like, really? You're dumb. If Scott would have stayed on the path he was in the beginning, this is the guy who he would become.
Yeah, that's a good way
because,
to look at
like,
it.
Because, like, Gideon Graves is so full of himself.
And he's also sort of an arbiter of what's like, cool and what's not cool.
And he's like, I'm the coolest. I'm the cat's pajamas. I'm the best thing.
Did you really just say the cat's
pajamas?
Yeah,
because I wanted to say another word, but I can't say the S word on the show. Okay. He's the S word. Like, that's how he thinks of himself.
Gotcha.
And so if Scott stayed on the path he was in the beginning of the movie, being like, I'm Mr. Cool Guy, he could have ended up like that.
Hey, maybe we should talk about...
there's two more cameos too.
The movie?
There's a couple more things.
Sure.
There's
right.
two more people.
Yeah.
Bill Hader doing the voice of the narrator. We of course have Thomas Jane uncredited as one of the vegan police officers. And then two more as Lee's Ballas bar patrons. We have Mr. Brian Lee O'Malley and his then wife Hope Larson.
Oh yeah. Well, that makes sense. You know, shooting a movie.
So yeah, so that is the cast of the movie. So what is the MacGuffin of the movie?
Maturity.
You would argue that. So it's no, well, first I, of all, what, sure a MacGuffin that. Is.
Yeah, it's a filmmaking term. Alfred Hitchcock used it a lot. It means the thing that drives the action, the things that people are trying to get, the thing everybody wants.
So Raiders of the Lost Ark, it's the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is in this movie. It's kind of tough.
It's a relationship
with Ramona Flowers.
Ramona Flowers.
I don't think everybody wants that, though.
No. Yeah.
There might be a split MacGuffin here.
It's Scott having a relationship with Ramona Flowers.
Some people want that.
Everybody wants that, or they don't want that, and they're trying to impede it.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's
or, a, they're, or they or they
I mean,
view
the,
that
the
as
setup
an obstacle.
Is Scott has to fight her evil exes, so it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Sort of where we're going with that.
Yeah.
Though, if you look at
but it's not. But I like that it's not Ramona Flowers. It's a relationship with.
I think
Ramona
we might
Flowers.
Not actually talk about the action sequences in this movie.
I mean,
because I have there's so many other things I want to talk about.
No, I know we can. I mean, the action sequences. I'll tell you this: the action sequences. We'll wrap it a nice little bow on it.
Yeah.
Imagine video games in real life, and that is what the action sequences
like
are in this movie. Legitimately video games in real life.
The kung fu fighting scenes are just shot super well.
There are
and
video game
really
sounds in
fun.
This movie.
Yeah.
They're like, I heard a sonic ring. I heard him going through a little warp zone when she pulls out the giant hammer.
Oh, yeah.
No, the action sequences in this movie are incredible. They are like super comic booky slash meets video games. It's... Like I said, this is the best representation of what a video game style thought process could be on a movie.
The problem is, like, a week after I watch this movie, every movie that I watch that is going to have any fighting, I'm disappointed that the fighting isn't as cool as it is in this movie.
Well, what I love
and I'm
about,
disappointed that yeah. it's not as fun and as silly. Like, the fighting in this movie is on its own level.
Well, and it's cartoonish. Like,
yeah, like there's nothing
Lucas
else.
Lee
there's
full
no
on
other
spins,
action movies.
Yeah, he spins Scott Pilgrim around and throws him into the air, like flying through the air into a giant stone wall. He falls down some what is it, raft? I know
it's a scaffolding.
Scaffolding and lands on some, like, I don't know, like cement
bags
or something,
some
bags, yeah. and gets up and walks away.
Yeah. and
it's
multiple times, like probably 3 or 4 times people are literally thrown yeah. through walls.
Oh, absolutely.
And it leaves big cartoony
holes
in the wall.
Yep. It's definitely cartoony. It's definitely video gamey. It's definitely comic booky.
I wish that more movies had action like that.
But there's not a lot of movies like this.
No, I know. Make more of them. If you have any control over movies being
do
made,
yeah.
do that.
So, but let's talk about, I don't know, you seem like you have some other thing. What do you want to talk about, right? I'll let
you
lead
the
discussion on this.
There's so many things about this movie that I really, really enjoy. Let's talk about, this movie is one of my very favorite, like a representation of one of my very favorite types of movies.
Okay.
A micro genre, if you will.
Okay.
By that I mean, like, a very small group of movies that all have very, very similar, are very similar in a lot of ways. So it's like a teeny tiny genre. Like I'm trying to, I have a list of them here, because like science fiction action comedies.
Okay.
The ones that come to mind are Men in Black, mm-hmm. Galaxy Quest, mm-hmm. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy,
yep.
And also World's End. Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot of science fiction movies that have a lot of action, but are also extremely funny.
Yes.
This movie is one of those. It's sort of action musicals.
Yeah, okay, I'll give that to you.
And the other movies that I have on my list as action musicals are The Blues Brothers.
Yes.
For obvious reasons. That. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And The Muppet Movie.
Yeah, I would argue
the first
that.
One, the 1977 movie.
I would argue
movie.
Any of the because, movies are action musicals.
Yeah, but especially
even
the first
new,
one.
Yeah, the first but, one was a road movie.
Because this movie has musical numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it does.
That are clearly musical numbers, but for any movies
there's
in
a
this,
Bollywood type musical
yeah.
song in this movie.
But any movies in this very tiny
S-L-I-C.
Genre, whenever there's music, the reason there's music is because there's a band.
Yeah.
And they're a band.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes sense for the. But at the same time, it's not just you're watching a band play on the stage, it's a musical number.
Mm-hmm.
But they still have a good story, but the music really drives the movie in a lot of ways. I mean, the sort of the outline of the plot in this movie is that they're in a battle of the bands,
mm-hmm.
the Scott Pilgrim's band, the Sexba Bombs.
No, just Sexba Bomb.
Yeah, okay.
The Sex Bombs.
The Sex Bomb. The Sex Bobs.
Sex Bob Bomb, which, by the way, if you're a Nintendo nerd, there's another video game reference for
there's
you.
There's tons
in this
of
movie.
Them.
They're all over. They're all over. It's
but
so
it, but anyway, yeah, so they're in a battle of the bands and.
I like the. I,
oh,
by the
man,
way,
I just
I like
love
the sex
the
bomb
music.
Music.
And so we should talk about the music in this movie.
Yeah, because that's important.
Nigel Godrich did the music in this movie, and if you like Radiohead, then you're probably a fan of Nigel Godrich because mm-hmm. he's produced all of their good albums.
Who wrote all the songs though?
All the songs were written mostly by him, but then the songs for Sexba Bomb
mm-hmm.
were written by Beck,
mm-hmm.
And
which he also performs.
Yeah, he performs them, except that in the actual movie, all of the people who are in the band in the movie had to actually learn the songs and actually performed them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So there's one band. What is it? What is the Clash of Demonhead?
Yes.
The song that they performed that's actually Brie Larson singing, but that is a song by a band called Metric.
Yeah.
It's such a good song.
Yeah, it is. It's great.
But it's like that. And even the silly songs by that band Crash and the Boys,
mm-hmm.
band Crash, those boys, the two or 3 second long songs, they are written and performed by a band called Broken Social Scene,
mm-hmm.
Who has a lot of sort of ties to Toronto area, and also the
of,
band
like,
Metric
really
forms a small part of
along
the band,
with name
so
some
Broken
other bands
Social
that
scene.
That the
oh,
hipsters listening might know
like other bands like Stars, Feist is in Broken Social Scene, Apostle of Hustle, Kevin Drew. I could go on, but I won't because it's boring.
No, it's not. People like music.
But it's funny because...
But the soundtrack for this is, honestly, it's incredible.
Well,
it's
and the soundtrack good. For this, I think...
I love Sex
is almost like
stuff.
Like at least half a Brian Lee O'Malley mixtape of the music he listened to when he made Scott Pilgrim.
Hence it the song named
the song,
Scott Pilgrim. By a band called Plumtree.
Yeah, which that's where he
got the name.
That's where he got the name, Scott Pilgrim. And that song's in the movie. You know, another interesting musical cue is that this has... towards the beginning of the movie, it has that beginning of The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past soundtrack.
Okay, it starts out with, it's a Universal movie. It starts out with an 8-bit version of the Universal.
It's like
16-bit
version.
I don't know. Some of those crashes really sound a little bit pixely. Too. It's kind of 16.
But anyway. But yeah, it does.
But yeah, it has a lot of like the sound work in this movie is incredible too. All the little video game sounds are so well placed and so well done.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, it's so familiar, but in it for a little bit, like we're talking about when Ramona pulls that hammer out, I'm like, where is that sound from? I know it's a Sonic the Hedgehog sound, but where? And then it finally hit me. That's what happens when you transport to the special stage. And I'm like, oh, I knew what that is. Like, it's great. It's fantastic.
Well, did you know that they actually had to have Nintendo screen the movie to approve that tiny sound clip?
Oh, for all the Zelda stuff?
And that Edgar Wright like was telling them, like, this is, like, you have to give us this because this is, like, our folklore.
Yes.
This is like our heritage.
Yeah.
This little bit.
I love that line too. What do you play? When Niles goes, young, what do you play?
And he's sitting there holding
his Nintendo
DS.
She's kind of a big question.
Legend of Zelda.
He has his little Game Boy Advance SP.
Was it? I think it's a DS.
No, it's an SP.
Is it a small one?
So it's a little. I remember having one of those.
Wanting one of those. And I bought the non-backlit Game Boy Advance for $10 from GameStop.
Bummer. Those are cool.
Much of a bummer because it was only $10.
I had a classic Nintendo one. It was pretty cool. What other stuff do you want to talk about?
Man, this movie is funny.
It is funny. The dialogue in this movie is so sharp, and it's almost a lot of it's. I mean, it's very in tune with the comics. I want to say it's 100% lifted from it.
No, but
it's very.
It's funny because I just read one of the volumes for our other show, Four Color Commentary, and I'm sitting there at the beginning, and it's some of the parts, like the part where they're sitting backstage with the Clash of Demon Head. A lot of that is just word for word.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you punch the highlights out of her hair.
Yeah.
It's not really something I can put into words right now.
Yeah.
It's pretty good, but the movie does deviate. To a certain extent, pretty significantly, just for time's sake and for extra characters' sake.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, in the comic books, Todd, who's in the Clash of Demon Head with Envy Adams, ends up that he's cheating on that girl with the drummer. And that part doesn't
come into
play.
The drummer who has
a robot arm.
Yeah.
We don't get that. The drummer who has a robot arm and can teleport.
Yes.
That doesn't come into play.
Yeah.
But the other thing, I think the big thing is that the original ending of this movie had Scott end up with Knives Chow.
Yeah, that's the big difference. And in the comic book, spoiler alert, by the way, that doesn't happen in the comic books.
Well, and the thing is, you can sort of see it when you watch the end of this movie.
Yeah.
When they have that final battle and it's Scott and Knives versus Gideon, it's a bookend with another scene a lot earlier in the movie where they're playing a video game together. Mm-hmm. And the original ending, which is actually on the Blu-ray, you can watch, and it sort of is the culmination of that. But I think it's a better ending, what they have, where Scott ends up with Ramona.
I mean, and here's why. It's because it's payoff. And it sounds silly and it's dumb, but at the most basic form, it's, I fought all these evil exes and now we can be together.
Yeah.
Done.
But I think the other thing is...
If you look deeper than that, I agree. There's more to it than
that. If you look at the character of Knives, and you were talking about how at the beginning you really don't like her character because she's just hopelessly devoted to Scott.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie where she doesn't end up with Scott, she says to him something that Wallace said to her a lot earlier in the movie, I'm too good for you, Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
And it's showing that her character has grown and changed and has gained also the power of self-respect.
And because
I think that's important, especially for her character being sort of like the young, immature character.
And the type of person Scott is, and I was talking about this with Ryan just off mic, but I was mentioning that the reason I think I find Knives Chow so annoying personally was because she didn't challenge Scott to be a better person.
Yeah.
She didn't challenge him saying, like, you're not all that. Like, I like you, but you're not all that. And that's what Ramona does. And that's the kind of person that Scott needs. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that's why I'm like, it makes more sense for him to be with Ramona. He needs to be with somebody who's going to challenge him and not think he's the best all the time. Like, it's It's weird. It's like a levels game. It's like to Knives at the beginning, Scott Pilgrim is way up here, and to him, she is like way down here, like just literally rebound fodder.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the movie, it seems like they're almost on an equal level with each other. Like she realizes her self worth. He realizes his, I guess, kind of self worth and who he is, and his he gains the power of self respect.
Yeah.
And that's it.
It's a line from
the movie. And you know what? And the other thing too, he stops lying.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of this movie is built around him just being a liar. And he's just like, no. I'm a douche. I'm owning up to all the stuff that I did. Like, that's kind of the end of this movie.
Yeah.
And they do that in the comic books in a very different way.
Very different.
But it's, they hint at it in this, but it's more done. It's more of a throwaway joke as opposed to.
Speaking of throwaway jokes, I really like how he has to replay the ending of this movie.
Yes, I think that's great. Once again, another great way to do a video game reference.
Yeah, because genius. That's something that you always do in video games. That the only other movie I can think of that's done that successfully is Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Where it's the same thing over and over, but they do it the same way as Edge of Tomorrow, where they don't show everything step by step all over again. Mm-hmm. We fast forward through parts that we already know what's going
to
happen.
Because he doesn't need to go through that. He's like, no, I already know this. I'm that's it. It's like a player.
Just like playing a game. Oh, yeah. I know exactly where to jump here.
Like, I don't have to read through all these little text boxes again. I know what they say.
Click, click,
yeah, yeah, go. Yeah.
The other thing, the one thing that really bums me out about this movie is one plot element.
Which is?
It is the microchip on Ramona Flowers.
That's also in the comics, though.
It's something completely different in the comics. But I'd argue with the way that this movie sets her character up, I don't think it's needed. I feel like if anything, it makes her character weaker.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it takes away some agency of her character to make her own decisions. Because she's kind of like being inevitably sucked back to Gideon Graves, whereas I feel like it makes her it makes her less human. It makes her more of a human person.
You could
to have her just been like, well,
you could also
go back to what I know.
You could also argue, though, because it's not like when that happens, she instantly starts beating him up.
No, it's true.
Like, you could also argue that just enhances her disposition to it.
Sure.
Think of it like, it's like a drug. It's like, if you're already already have an addictive personality, you introduce something like a drug like that into it, it makes it worse.
Right.
So it becomes that. So I think, I understand where you're coming from. I never really thought about that much that way. I always just kind of thought like, oh, it just makes sure that this happens and only this happens.
I think part of it that frustrates me is that, because I expect a lot from Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
It's never, there's no Chekhov's microchip. It's never mentioned. There's no hints of it at all earlier in the movie.
Well, it's almost a throwaway joke. It's because he puts a little microchip. Oh, that is evil. Like,
well,
just
in the throwaway
to drive
joke,
the point
she says,
home.
She says a couple of times he really has a way of getting into my head.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and that's it. And that's the only payoff.
And there's also all the subspace highway stuff that they don't go into. But I mean,
That doesn't affect her character. That's just something they do because it's a weird mystical land.
Here's my justification for it. I bet you because, as we know, the sixth book came out like just before this movie, barely just before this movie came out.
So obviously the sixth book was not written when this movie was being made.
So maybe Brian told him that was going to be a bigger deal and the book changed his mind.
Yeah.
And said, no, I'm going to do something a little bit different than that. And so when you get the movie.
Spoiler for the book. In the book, her bag, little bag that can hold the huge hammer, that's actually like a gateway to her mind.
Mm-hmm.
And Gideon has control over that.
Yes.
And so he is literally living in her mind.
Yeah.
Which takes on a much different form in the book. I don't know, man. I just can't. Like, it doesn't matter how many times I watch this movie.
Yeah.
I always hate that part.
I can understand that, though. I think the way that I kind of justify it is the way I explained, but I can understand why that would be like.
Like, I don't like the part where she ends up with him because that scene bums me out.
Yeah.
But that's good filmmaking.
Yeah.
But when she's like, the microchip just sort of falls off and Scott goes, oh, he's evil. I'm just like, ugh.
That doesn't bother me.
If I ever like became friends with Edgar Wright, not that I'm a stalker, and he was like, tell me what you think about Scott Pilgrim. I'd be like, look, we need to talk about this microchip scene because it just bugs me.
He'd probably, you know what his response would probably be? Yeah.
Yeah. Except he'd say with a British accent.
He's got a Scott Pilgrim tattoo on himself, doesn't he?
I have no idea.
I heard rumors that he
I would
movies,
not know.
All his movies.
I am not a stalker, Ian. Gosh.
So what else? But what else is there about this movie that you'd like to talk about?
I want
to
watch this movie a million times. Actually, this is one of those movies where when we were talking about talking about this movie.
This really is the movie that inspired this whole 2 months of movies, good it and is. Bad.
We were both like, how can we justify watching? Not that you need justification, but no, we but wanted
we're
to
like,
make it a
we're
thing.
Like, how do we make that a thing that's like a cool thing? And we're like, well, there's a lot of movies that are based off comic books that aren't Marvel or DC.
And aren't like superhero comics.
And this to me is the culmination of that, like something that is totally separate from that, that is all its own,
but it's still very rooted. It's still definitely a comic book movie.
Yeah, it's rooted almost in comic books and video games.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I think, which is great, because I mean, it is a video game. They made a video game that's loosely based on the comic books. It's actually pretty good. It's an old school beat 'em up style.
Oh yeah. And it's funny because there's some bleed between the video game and the movie, because the part at the very end where the little Scott Pilgrim video game character beats up the Scott Pilgrim logo, that's from the game.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
It's a lot of cross promotion that went really well. You know what bums me out about this movie also? It wasn't very successful.
No, it was not. I think it's marketing. It came down to the way the film was marketed. Like, they were doing a really good job of it. Like, the year before Comic-Con, they had like this whole thing and it was going to be huge. They had this whole buildup. And I think it just kind of fluttered out when they actually had it. Like, I think they're like, oh, the Comic-Con audience likes it, so everyone will like it.
We don't need to promote it
because they're all going to like it.
I mean, but there were plenty of promotions for this. You know, there was a lot of Adult Swim tie-ins, and they even made a short animation that explains Scott and Kem getting together.
Yeah, but I had to tell, let's put it this way. My mom and dad had not heard about the movie, and I had to tell them to go see it. My mom and dad loved it. My mom was like, this is great. Like, this is so good. And I was like, yeah, it's a comic book. She's like, that's a comic book?
Yeah, apparently there's a quote from a Universal executive who, like, after this movie came out, several Universal executives, some were like, oh, this movie is, like, I don't understand this movie, but, you know, I thought it would do good. But somebody else said was, like, somebody else from Universal, maybe anonymously, but somebody high up was like, this is the best movie we've put out this year, and there was, and nobody thought that it would do well, and so
because people who are probably in charge, and this is just true of all movie studios, don't know how to market a movie like this.
I feel like
they don't know how to do it.
I want to believe this is a movie like Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
Which at some point when you're in high school, you have to watch Ferris Bueller. And if you haven't, which is normal, I hadn't seen it, you know, when I was halfway through high school, some friend was like, "Hey, have you seen Ferris Bueller?" I was like, "No, I have no idea what that is." Like, you have to watch it.
Yeah.
I feel like when you are 21, 22, one of your friends somewhere has to say, "Hey, have you seen Scott Pilgrim? Let's watch that because it's great."
Yeah, and well, the thing, this movie's taken on a whole life of its own now. I mean, there's, around us at least, there's midnight showings, like very, very Rocky Horror-like.
That's true.
People dress up and they sing the songs, and like, it's great. And I've been meaning to go to one of them. I've been wanting to go, because I see them every couple months. They have them at this theater over nearby us, and I've been wanting to go. And so one of these times I will do that. But I mean, I saw this movie enough times in the movie theater. I saw this movie so many times in the movie theater. I was sitting in the movie theater quoting and reading for my favorite bits to come up.
Scott, if your life had a face, I would punch it.
So good.
What's
the address for Amazon.ca? Amazon. Oh, dude, this thing claims I have mail. Oh, dude, look, now I'm reading it.
We could quote this movie a lot.
Boring.
All right. Okay, so my last word on this movie.
Let's wrap it up. What are your final thoughts?
This is a great movie. I can't wait until my kids are like 16 or 17, and we're going to watch the heck out of this movie. Rated PG-13.
You could probably watch a little soon.
Yeah, we'll see.
That.
We'll see how they are.
Maybe 13, but, 14. If I would have had this movie when I was 14 years old, my head would have exploded from
the
sheer
thing
joy.
I worry about is that a 14-year-old watching the movie is going to be like, oh, Scott Pilgrim is awesome. I should be like him.
No, because I was like, but see, I didn't think of Scott Pilgrim as being a jerk. My takeaway was not.
Well, right.
My takeaway, hold on. Let me take my takeaway from it when I was in my early 20s was not Scott Pilgrim is awesome. I should be like Scott Pilgrim and be a jerk to everybody. My takeaway from it is the whole knives thing just didn't even enter my head. Like, it was more like, I should fight for the person that I want to be with. It's right. If you like somebody enough, you should go for it. And if it's going to be hard, but if you really care about somebody, if you're in lesbians with somebody, you will fight for them. Like, that's how I took it, being a young, dumb idiot. And now watching it, I'm like, oh, Scott grew a lot. Yeah. he's a grown up. Like, he
learned to be able to get over.
Yeah. He learned baggage. He learned how to be himself. And yeah, exactly. So I don't know. Maybe I can get where you're coming from. Maybe 15 or six. Like I feel like after somebody has a breakup, be like, watch this. This is good.
There you go.
Don't be like this douchebag.
The other thing is that this movie has one of my favorite musical cues ever, and it is the scene where Scott sees Knives in the crowd after the band.
So heartbreaking.
And it's super heartbreaking, and the song that plays is a perfectly placed song. It's exactly right. Thing is, the song was at that time like 10 years old. Mm-hmm. The song's called Anthem for a 17-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Oh, it gives me goosebumps just to think about it. Also, the band that made that song, Broken Social Scene, they're the ones who do the music for Crash and the Boys.
Yep, that's correct.
That band with Crash.
That's a great cue. But anyway.
I love this movie. I love the heck out of this movie.
We both do.
The soundtrack is spectacular. Yep. The comics. Mm-hmm. It's amazing that I only have one Scott Pilgrim t-shirt.
Yeah,
It is a shirt that references a different video game.
I have zero Scott Pilgrim t-shirts anymore. I used to have a couple, find them anymore. I don't know what happened to them.
I may have stolen them.
No, I may have gotten fatter and can't fit into them anymore. There you go.
Same thing.
And unfortunately, We Love Fine, I think, pulled down all their Scott Pilgrim stuff, which bumps me out. I can't find it anymore. I'm going to go look. I'm going to scour the web for one, though. I've been meaning to do that, and now what I've been meaning to do, truthfully, and now I think I'm going to, once I get next paycheck, is go and find somebody on like Etsy or eBay who like makes illegally printed copies of all the t-shirts that he wears in the movie. And just get those.
You can probably just buy one from Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah, but then it says Smashing Pumpkins on the back.
His does too.
No, it doesn't. It's
that
just
would be
blank.
Movie accurate.
No, it does, his does not say Smashing Pumpkins in the back. It's just smashing. Blank. Sean Connery made an appearance.
All right.
If you don't like Scott Pilgrim, I put my foot up your ass.
Scott Pilgrim is one of the best movies that I can think of that has come out in the last 10 years.
I love this movie. I'm surprised I haven't watched it in like 4 years, because probably because I saw it so much.
It's one of those movies. I don't even like, I almost didn't watch it because I can think of every scene and all the lines, but it's still so much fun to
watch. Let's put it this way. My wife has
also seen it a million times, and we both sat down and watched it together, and we're laughing at all
the day that I watched it. It was yesterday, and as Ryan knows, we work the same job. Our job was very poopy that day.
Yeah.
And so I sat down. I was by myself at home because I was just like, I don't want to. I gotta stay here and do this. And I got a headache and this and that. I put on Scott Pilgrim because I had to watch it. And then the second, well, they're gonna call it We Are Sex with Bum, but I'm gonna call it Launchpad McQuack starts up. I'm rocking out on the couch by myself. I'm like, thank God no one's home, because they'd come home to me going like, dun, 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 like just rocking out. I'm like, because the music's so much fun in this movie. So Ryan, what is your rating then?
Oh man, I'm gonna give it. Don't give me that look.
I think I know where you're going. If you give it a perfect rating, I'm going to call you out on it, because I know you don't think it's perfect.
All right, I'm going to give it a 9.5.
Yeah.
9.5 coins that explode when Scott headbutts someone.
Sweet.
Out of 10.
I'm going to also give it 9.5. 9.5 loaves of garlic bread that make you fat.
Bread makes you fat?
Bread makes you fat?
Glad we got that out of the way.
9.5 loaves of garlic bread out of 10. So that,
clearly,
blockbuster.
Oh, yeah.
See it.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, if it was a yes
why,
or no.
Why have you watched this yet?
Why aren't you watching
this
right
again.
Now?
Go watch
why,
it right now.
Yeah, watch it right now.
If you know me personally, I will let you borrow the DVD.
I own this movie in multiple formats.
Yeah,
so
same.
That's how much I love it. That is Scott Pilgrim versus the World, and that is our show. That ends up Big Two Boot, which is, it was fun. This was enjoyable.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
a way to watch comic book movies without watching comic book movies. But, next movie we're watching, we're going to go back to a semi, well, not standard format, but we're going to watch some movies that have been like on the back burner and some that are...
We've been having like, we got to watch comic book movies and, we had International Beatdown Month. We're just going to watch some movies we've been wanting to watch.
And we're going to watch some movies we wanted to watch, but the first one is a more recently inspired movie it's an older, not an older version of, but an older instance, I'll say.
Just say the movie.
A very common... If you guys haven't seen this, by the way, hold on. If you haven't seen this, by the way... If you guys are still sitting listening to this podcast and you've not seen Mad Max Fury Road, get out and go see it, for goodness sake. It's
you
so
like
good.
This podcast, you like movies with explosions and car
chases. This movie is for you.
Yeah.
And well, if we were doing that movie and you said explosions and car chases, and I would be like, and freaky, weird, lumped people from the future.
You wouldn't just say and explosions and car chases
and men and women
explosions and car
and
chases
and men and women
and explosions and car
and
chases
and men and women working together to solve problems together.
And explosions and car chases.
Yes. I would recommend you see Mad Max Fury Road, but that's not the movie we're going to be talking about. We're going to be going back to its predecessor, the second movie in the series, known in Australia and everywhere else in the world as Mad Max 2, but in America, known as The Road Warrior.
You know, I've never seen this
movie. Really?
I feel ashamed to admit that.
Have you seen the original Mad Max?
I have.
Okay, but have you seen Beyond Thunderdome?
No.
Oh, we should watch that
one. I've seen parts of Beyond Thunderdome.
Okay, so, well, that is going to be what we're going to be watching next time, so come join us back here next time for The Road Warrior.
And if you want to listen to us talk about Mad Max Fury Road
with our pal Chewie. There's a podcast
Coming out called Spoil It For Me.
Yeah.
So more details as that develops.
Yes. So
follow us on Twitter.
Yes. But join us here next time for Road Warrior. And remember, whether it's Blockbuster
or Lackluster,
we're the Super Action Bros. We did it backwards that time.
This has been a production of the Stuff and Things Podcast Network.
Exclusively at stuffandthingsnetwork.com.
Scott, if your life had a face, I would punch it.
Yeah. Wait, what?